This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In Texas, approximately 1 million adults are affected by a serious mental illness, from depression and post-traumatic stress disorder to schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, substance abuse disorders, and more. And then 500,000 children under the age of 17 suffer from a severe emotional disturbance. Each year, Texas spends $1.4 billion in emergency rooms and $650 million in local judicial system costs dealing with mental illness and substance use disorders. House Speaker Joe Strauss from San Antonio says mental health is a major public health issue and a top priority for the current legislative session. He appointed a Texas Select Committee on the House Select Committee on a Mental Health, which concluded that funding and access to treatment are the major problem points for Texans in need of mental health care. And the House has tentatively passed a law regarding the equal coverage of mental and physical health care by insurance coverage. It's been said that this is an issue that both parties can work together on, because when it's done right, this saves taxpayer money and increases public safety. What problems do you have, or your family? What have you had in trying to access mental health services here locally in San Antonio? What about having mental health covered in your health insurance plan? How would that help you? We invite you into our conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource at tpr.org, and you can tweet us at tprsource. Talking about that this afternoon, we're joined by Greg Hanch. He is the Public Policy Director for the National Alliance on Mental Health Texas, NAMI, and also with us is Liza Jensen, the Executive Director for NAMI San Antonio, and David Slayton. He is the Executive Director for the Texas Judicial Council's Office of State of Court Administration. Welcome to The Source, all of y'all. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Talking about
the big issue that Texas has been reluctant to talk about in the past, mental health, and trying to do something about it. David Slayton, what is changing?
Well, I think there's a realization by state policy leaders and the community at large that the way that we've been handling mental health issues in the justice system and in the community at large needs improvement. Back in the 70s, a lot of the mental health treatment services were decreased. And now what we know is that local jails are the primary place where mental health services are provided. It's been said that they're the largest psychiatric facilities in the state. And many people believe that those are not appropriate places for those services to be provided. And so, I think you see policymakers from all over the place, from the state at the national level, as well as, at the local level here in Texas, saying, let's find a different way to do this and make sure that individuals who do have mental health issues are put into treatment services in the most appropriate place for them, that's and perhaps not in the criminal justice system, if appropriate.
So, and David, you're looking at increasing or beefing up or linking treatment with jail diversion. Is that it?
Yeah. So, right now, judges have very limited options to deal with individuals who have mental health issues. First of all, there's oftentimes a lack of information provided to judges about an individual's mental health condition when those exist. And so in those cases where the information is not available to the judge, especially whenever there's an arrest, those individuals may get placed into the jail where proper services may not be available, or at least are very expensive to the local taxpayer and are not set up properly in the jail. And then secondly, what we see is that individuals who have competency issues because of a mental health condition, most of the time those individuals are being sent to state hospitals where there may be better places to deal with them in the local community or in the local jail through some competency restoration services. So we're really looking at trying to expand options for judges and making sure that the places where individuals can receive mental health services are provided to them in the most appropriate place.
Greg Hanch over at NAMI Texas, what do you see as the big breakthrough that could be coming out of this legislative session?
I think there are various opportunities to improve our mental health system in this legislative session. I think we can potentially achieve an expansion of our mental health system capacity. Some of the areas where people need services and don't get access to them are, you know, as David mentioned, in our state hospital system, where we have a lot of beds that are being used by people who are there on competency restoration, who maybe could be more appropriately served in a different setting. And the impact of that is that beds are taken away from people who truly are in need of them, who, you know, who are in crisis, who are a risk of harm to themselves or others, or are badly deteriorating in the community. So, you know, it seems like leadership on both sides sees the need for reserving those beds for those who truly need them, and expanding beds on a, you know, a broad of a scale as possible, to the extent that our revenues allow for it. You know, sort of repairing state hospitals, addressing some of the deferred maintenance funding issues that we've seen, so that more people get access to those beds, and also addressing the wait list at community mental health centers is another opportunity that leadership is looking at to ensure that those who need services and you know, those even who are asking for services are getting access to them. So I think you know, our big opportunity in this session, if there's going to be one, it's expanding our mental health system capacity. And there are some other, you know, components of that that are being looked at to bring person-centered services to people based on their individual need.
Liza Jensen, NAMI San Antonio, how are we witnessing the fact that there is not enough capacity here in San Antonio Bexar County?
So to piggyback on what Greg said, I think you have to take a look at where do we rank nation overall. And in 2015, of the 245 counties, only 205 of the 245 even had mental health professionals in them. So we have a work shortage across the state. And if you think about where we are with inpatient beds, like the San Antonio State Hospital, we're 43rd. To translate what that means, well, the San Antonio State Hospital covers 55 counties, literally draw a line through San Antonio in the bottom half of the state. There are only 64 general acute beds. And so what that means, 64 beds for 55 counties, and consequently what you have is what Greg was talking about, in that we've got more and more what they call forensic beds for patients who have been incarcerated taking up the beds in the state hospital. And the population's been growing, but they're not expanding the bed capacity. What that means in San Antonio is that you can't move patients to the state hospital. That ends up causing a domino effect, and they do what we call psych stacking in the emergency room. So, for example, the state hospital has several things. It's outdated. It needs to be repaired. They've not kept up with fair market values on their ability to hire nurses. There's a physician shortage. And so the whole issue related to state access beds is a very complex problem with many facets that need to be addressed.
We're talking about what the legislature is looking at to try to increase the capacity, coverage, access for mental health care in Texas. They're discussing some big reforms in Austin, and they're talking to actually funding some of this as well. What will this look like if this comes to be and becomes law in Texas? What are our needs? What have you experienced in not being able to access mental health care when your family is in crisis? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The lawmakers in Austin, they're taking up a slew of mental health bills, looking at three big priorities on this issue: expanding health coverage for mental health conditions, establishing a jail diversion program, and improving mental health education across the state. Mental health is one of the big issues that does unite members of the Texas House and Senate and both parties, because they know that when we can get this right, that we can save tax dollars, we can improve public safety, and we can deal with people who are really need some support and help and alleviate suffering in our community. So what challenges have you seen in your family or in your life trying to access mental health coverage, mental health care here in San Antonio or across the state? We'd love to hear your story. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Liza Jensen from NAMI San Antonio. I mean, tell me a story. How does this work? I mean, if I am a guy and suddenly somewhere either me or someone in my life is having a sudden health mental health crisis, what options do I have?
Okay, one of the things we do at NAMI is we handle these calls every day. The first thing we do is we try and evaluate whether it's a mental health crisis or not. If it is a crisis and the family cannot take the individual they're concerned about to an emergency room or to the crisis center downtown on Frio, we ask them to call 911.
So what would a mental health crisis look like?
It is that I had a call today that my husband is hearing things, he's seeing things, he got sent home from his work, he's been increasingly paranoid, and he needs to be evaluated now. So my advice to the individual was to, is he capable of going to an emergency room? Will he get in the car with you? Is it safe to take him there? If he is, you want to get him to the nearest appropriate emergency room so he can be evaluated. We always want to do that because we never know whether it's medically based or psychiatrically based. And there's a lot of medical conditions that actually mimic psychiatry crisis. And so we want to clear that. If the patient is not able to be safely transported, we ask them to call 911. And we always ask them to ask for a crisis intervention team trained officer. That is a law enforcement officer or a deputy that has had 40 hours of mental health training to talk to them. What's the difference between a mental health crisis and a criminal behavior type of thing? And then what we do is we go out there, that a law enforcement officer will evaluate them. And then depending on what he sees, because he's been trained to tell the difference, he will take them to the nearest appropriate emergency room to be evaluated. Once they get there, a physician in the ER will evaluate them. If the person is consenting voluntarily, they will be in the ER as a voluntary patient. But let's say that person is too paranoid or too psychotic and they think that the people in the ER are out to hurt them. The officer can get an emergency detention, which is a temporary hold to restrict their rights so that they can be evaluated by a physician. Once that physician does the evaluation, then the treatment paths kind of split. If the person is in crisis but does not need hospitalization, meaning that they're suicidal, homicidal, or a danger to themselves or others, that physician may give them an urgent referral for outpatient care. If, on the other hand, that individual requires detox or hospitalization, then they're going to put them in the most appropriate setting.
And so David Slayton over at the Texas Judicial Council's Office of Court Administration, you're looking at this type of situation. If someone does have a mental health crisis and they do act out in a way that draws the attention of police and he gets arrested, he or she gets arrested, you're trying to make sure what happens.
Right. Obviously, the goal is what Liza just mentioned there is that, you know, someone will be able to be handled in a civil way, which is what this process you just described. But oftentimes there may be criminal conduct that's committed, and so law enforcement may arrest the individual. And when they get to jail, there's been a law in the books since the early 90s that requires information that may indicate that the individual has a mental health condition to be passed along to the magistrate, in which case the magistrate can then order an assessment of that individual to determine whether or not it's appropriate to release them from jail and order them into some sort of outpatient treatment. Unfortunately, just the way the law is structured from a timing perspective, that information is not required to be provided to judges until 72 hours after the individual receives it, the sheriff or the jailer receives the information. But the magistrates are required to make their decision within 48 hours. So you can imagine that sometimes the information is getting there too late, or it's just not getting to them at all. And so the hope is that with several of the bills that the legislature is hearing, that number one, that timeline can be synced up to where it would work more appropriately. And then that individuals who are assessed to have mental health issues can be released from jail into the community for those services without any barriers. Right now, there are some barriers. For instance, there may be some schedule that's in place, a bond schedule, that prohibits them from being released, even though the law actually requires judges to order them released if they can be safely released in that treatment. And so these bills look at addressing those issues so that an individual who's arrested could be, number one, screened appropriately, assessed appropriately, and then released in the community to receive that treatment if that's a safe place for them to be.
So, David, it sounds like you're saying that there are some fixes that can be done in tinkering with the law and how we handle these types of cases and what judges are required to do. So is that happening?
Yeah, so the laws, the bills that are flowing through the system right now would we believe would fix the issues if they're being followed. You know, basically what would happen is right now the sheriff or jailer who has 72 hours to provide that information that they already have, not any new information they have to gather, but information they may have from, say, a jail screening form, which is required as someone comes into jail, or a check of the mental health records that the local mental health authority may have that many sheriffs and jailers do. That information be provided to the judge within 4 hours. Right now, as I said, it's 72 hours. And we believe that information getting to the judges faster will then allow them to comply with the rest of the law, which says that when a judge has that information, they're required to get the defendant assessed. And then basically once the defendant is assessed, then of course they can make decisions about the appropriate place for that individual to receive the treatment, whether that's in some sort of ultimately into a jail-based program, which many jails have, or out into the community, or down the road, if it's more appropriate for them to be in some state facility, that would be the place they could go as well.
And so, Greg, try and really break this down for me. Try to avoid as much jargon as you can. Explain to me how that provides a better outcome.
Well, you know, I think it's a lot of it has to do with access to evidence-based treatment and services.
I don't even know what that means.
So, you know, a person is evaluated by a mental health professional, and the evaluation reveals that a person has, a particular diagnosis, and these are the services that will work for that individual. So it could be counseling, it could be medication, it could be peer support. There are a variety of treatments that can be used. So, you know, if we're appropriately identifying these people when they come into the criminal justice system and divert them. And I think, you know, a lot of these proposals that are being considered, including those being recommended by the Texas Judicial Council, have a lot to do with diverting people into treatment and expanding access to evidence-based jail diversion programs that have shown to reduce jail, the amount of money that is spent and the number of days that a person with mental illness stays in jail.
Right. And I don't know if you've ever spent any time in jail, but it does not help your mental state. It actually makes it much, much worse. You're going to be stressed on all sorts of certain levels, and anything that you're demonstrating is just going to be aggravated in that circumstance. We're going to take a break. We're going to go back to our pledge drive and remind folks about the importance of supporting public radio. We're talking today about mental health and some reforms that are being talked about up in Austin. Mental health care, along with public health, is something that the source has paid a lot of attention to. We know that when we talk about these things, that we can communicate to people actionable information, what happens when this happens to someone in your life. Also, try to raise levels of empathy in the community and try and come up with solutions for people who are really suffering. Listen to our folks. They're going to tell you how to support public radio, because when you do, you help all sorts of issues. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. If Texas doesn't take bolder steps to fix its mental health system, the consequences could be perilous for the state. That's according to a House committee report that was released earlier this year looking at the mental health networks that we have here in Texas. They're calling for major reforms and overhauls, trying to increase access for mental health treatment for patients, behavioral health services, increasing the number of beds available in state hospitals, early intervention for school children with behavioral health issues, investing in jail diversion programs, and so many other issues that need to be taken up. We have a major suicide issue here in San Antonio. San Antonio leads the state in suicides, teen suicides. Why is that? How can something like this come into play to help? That is a mental health issue. How can we deal with that? We invite you into our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. Liza Jensen is with us. She is the executive director of the San Antonio branch of the National Alliance of Mental Health, NAMI San Antonio, and Greg Hunch. He is the public policy director for the National Alliance of Mental Health, NAMI Texas. So, Liza, tell me about San Antonio's suicide, teen suicide issue here.
So one of the things that we know is that suicide is on the rise, and it is now the second leading cause of death for young adults between the ages of 15 and 24. If you think about suicide and how it plays out in your day-to-day, one of the things that we know for many kids with social media, there's bullying. And actually the evidence says, the studies say that for kids who attempt suicide, there's a high correlation of bullying that happens through social media. And so consequently, one of the pieces of legislature that is being proposed is to mandate suicide education training in the schools. How do you recognize? What do you do about it? And that's pretty important, because if we don't teach our kiddos how to say no, how to stand up, and how not to tolerate when somebody else is being bullied in school, it puts a lot of pressure on the kids with that and the access to social media. And so we've got to be thinking about how to do things differently, and that's where education is empowering. Let's say one of the other topics we had before the break had to do with state hospital. And the average person out there will may be wondering, well, why does that state hospital thing even matter to me in my daily life? Well, let's pretend that your adolescent really is at a point that is suicidal. Well, the San Antonio State Hospital, who I mentioned serves 55 counties, including San Antonio, has no current adolescent bed open right now. It is closed because they do not have enough nurses to staff the unit. Consequently, what happens is all these rural communities who don't have mental health providers in them are coming to San Antonio. What happens then is that you've got a kiddo who is talking suicide, maybe has taken some pills or is threatening to suicide, and you take them to the emergency room to be evaluated. I was at a meeting this past week where a hospital told me they had an adolescent sitting in their ER for 72 hours. Obviously, nobody wants to be hanging around in an ER. It's not a safe place. It's noisy, and it's not the right place for somebody who needs treatment, but they couldn't move the patient because there was no beds. We have a finite number of beds in San Antonio, which are at capacity, with the 30 beds from SASH being closed and the rural community coming in. What the hospitals are forced to do is all of these adolescents that are stacking in the emergency room, they now have to ship them out to Austin or beyond that, finding a bed across the state because there's no room at the end here. And so the communications that we're having about funding the state hospital system and the capacity play out daily in our emergency rooms. And I would really hate for anybody to go to the ER thinking that they're going to get immediate care, only to find out that there's not even beds available in San Antonio.
Okay, we're going to take calls in just a second. We want to hear more about this from Greg Hunch. How is what's going on in Austin, discussions about reforms in the legislative session, going to impact what we're just hearing about the lack of beds at the state hospital, and particularly dealing with teen suicide prevention?
Well, I think, you know, this conversation about teen suicide prevention really illustrates the need to move some of our focus upstream to the extent possible. So we know that half of individuals living with mental illness experience onset by the age of 14, and that number jumps to 75% by the age of 74. And about half of these people, these young individuals, are not receiving needed services. So that's a significant reason why we're seeing such a high suicide rate among young people, is that they're not getting the services that they need, and so many of them are affected by mental illness. So I think putting a focus on the school climate, ensuring that teachers are appropriately trained and other school personnel are appropriately trained, and creating a positive school climate, so that if a child is exhibiting signs and symptoms of mental illness, that we can intervene early, link them up with services, and ensure that mental health of students are being promoted, and that, you know, these are environments that are conducive to recovery and to positive emotional processing. And so that there's a big focus right now on emphasizing the importance of early intervention and prevention, and a lot of that can be done through the school system.
What I really want to understand better in this conversation is how people who need healthcare services are not able to access healthcare services. And I want to hear if anyone is out there and has a story that they can share with me so I can understand this better, please give me a call. The number is 210-614-8980. I would love to hear that. And Deborah has called in. And Deborah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to share a little bit about how difficult it is to access mental health services. I lost a nephew to suicide, and I struggle with my own mental health challenges. And I have studied a lot and know how to navigate the system, but I cannot find a psychiatrist. I have a nurse practitioner who helps handle my mental health issues. And that's why I think it is so important for us to look at certified peer specialists. People need to have access to peers who are in recovery from mental health issues to help us each other navigate and come to terms with finding the health solutions that we need. We still need psychiatrists. We still need hospitals. But Greg was talking about doing more things upstream. And I think that prevention is a very big part of this. In our schools, starting very young with social emotional learning, helping to have people and peers to talk to help navigate that system can help us intervene before symptoms elevate. So I do hope that bills that are in our capital right now that will help expand peer services across Texas might be one step in the right direction.
Deborah, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. So, Liza, can you help me understand how peer-to-peer work is happening here in San Antonio?
Sure. One of the things that we offer at NAMI is a class literally called Peer-to-Peer, and it is a class that is led by somebody stable in their recovery, and because they have walked the walk and lived that mental health experience, and they've navigated the system, and they are stable in their care, they turn around and teach a class for other people who have a mental health diagnosis. So they teach them problem solving, coping, mindfulness. They talk to them about what their rights are because education is empowering. To expand on the caller's comment, we do have a shortage in San Antonio when it relates to psychiatrists. And a lot of people may have experienced in your audience the fact that they've tried to reach a psychiatrist and they can't get in because the access wait time is about 4 months. That's if you have insurance. And so what frequently happens is that people will go on their insurance panel list and they'll start calling people and they'll hear, my panel is closed, I'm not accepting new patients, or I dropped this insurance. And so what we're seeing is so many people trying to get in to get medication management. And so thank goodness for nurse practitioners and other people who are standing in the gap. One of the bills that is very important that I'm hoping people will pay attention to is House Bill 1594. It has to do with expedited physician credentialing. And what does that mean? Well, Texas is one of 8 states that does not offer psychiatrist reciprocity, meaning that if somebody in Michigan wants to get out of the cold and move to San Antonio and hang up his shingle and practice, he can't. Because we don't have that, you got your medical degree over in Michigan and you can practice here in San Antonio. It takes about a year for them to get credentialed in the state of Texas. That particular bill, we're already short psychiatrists, would allow those that really do want to come to San Antonio to practice in a more timely manner. And we need that to help support the workforce pipeline that was being talked about.
If someone is in need of an immediate health care, a mental health crisis they're having, and they run into this problem that you talked about, they can't find a psychiatrist quick enough, can they call NAMI?
Absolutely. And what we would tell them is, number one, go to the nearest appropriate emergency room. An emergency room will perform an evaluation for safety risk. Are you suicidal? Are you homicidal? Are you a danger to yourself? The other thing that we have is we have a 24-hour clinic at 401 North Frio, which is the crisis care clinic. They also have a restoration center where there's able to be detox. But you're going to get a mental health evaluation by a mental health professional. And if you do need further acute care services, they're going to get you to a hospital placement there. The other thing I mentioned earlier is if you can't go to the nearest ER, you can't go to the crisis care center, then you can call a 911 and ask for a crisis intervention team officer to come to you.
And up in Austin, Greg, there seems to be a lot of momentum in trying to come up with something that's going to provide more funding. Is that what we're seeing?
Yeah, funding is a big piece of the picture here. I think another important reform that is much needed is around insurance benefits and access to mental health care if a person is insured. And we do have a problem with people lacking insurance, and that's something we need to address as well. But sadly, having insurance alone is often not enough to access treatment and services that mental health professionals and other healthcare providers recommend and prescribe. So this is an issue of people with mental illness who have insurance being treated differently than people without mental illness who have insurance. This is the concept of mental health parity. We find if we look at the denial rates that people with mental illness are denied at often twice the rate of people with other health conditions.
All right. Well, and we'll talk about that more when we come back from this break. We'll take these calls as well that we have holding, waiting to talk to us. We're going to get them to, as well as the source continues. And the number is 210-614-8980. If you want to join our conversation as we talk about reforms for mental health care in Texas, stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies talking about public policy priorities for mental health in Texas. House Speaker Joe Strauss has made it a priority. We're seeing a battery of bills working their way through the legislature. They have money set aside. Who knows if it's enough, but they've got money set aside looking to expand coverage, fix our state hospitals to some point. Maybe even to expand the state hospitals, but what else needs to be done? Give us a call. We want to hear from you, particularly about problems that you've had or someone in your family has had trying to access mental health care in this area. 210-614-8980. Elise is on the line. Hi, Elise. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. So I was in a previous relationship with a man who had depression. He didn't think he needed help, and his family didn't think he needed help in they actually didn't recognize depression as an actual illness because it was mental, and mental illnesses didn't count to them. So there was one night where he would say he'd kill himself and the dog, and he left the house with his knives in the middle of the night. I called 911, and the Bexar County Sheriff's Department was able to pick him up and get him to the help that he needed. It wasn't, you know, with his, you know, he wasn't voluntarily going, but, you know, he went. So after he had some of his hospital stay and he was going to his crisis center check-in, some of his appointments that I went with him, like, he would have to, like, wait, like, 3 hours to see his case manager. It just seemed like a lot of stuff for him to do and have to wait for someone who didn't really want to be there in the first place. And I was just kind of wondering, like, once they're in the system, how can you keep them in? Because, I mean, they're not really motivated to go back if they weren't wanting to go in the first place. And the other part is, if people don't understand that mental illness is an actual sickness, it counts just as much as a physical illness. How could we ever prioritize money towards that if people don't even recognize it as a problem?
All right, Elise, thank you so much for that question. It's a very sophisticated question. It's the only kind of question you're going to get from someone who has had, you know, a contact with the system, and you see that's a great question.
So, number one, thank you for calling in, and I'm so sorry of what you had to go through. That must have been incredibly stressful for you, but I'm glad that you persevered and that he was able to get the help that he wanted. So your question, I kind of break it down to three things. The first one is, what do you do with somebody who doesn't recognize that you have a mental illness? Number one, when at NAMI, we actually try not to talk about diagnosis of depression or anything else. What we do instead is talk about the symptoms. And the way I use this analogy is, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink if it's not thirsty. Your job is to kind of salt the oats a little bit. So you could say to him, I'm really concerned about you. I notice you're not sleeping. I notice that you're drinking more. I notice that you're talking about hurting yourself, and I'd be really concerned if something happened to you. You're too important to me. Can we work through this together? I don't know how to help you, but maybe I can find somebody who can. So that's something you can do to partner alongside that individual to let them know that they mean something to you. That's actually called a protective factor, and what that means is that you're giving them a reason to live. Some people who are suicidal will say, well, I could never commit suicide because I wouldn't want to leave my kids. That's an example of another protective factor.
Right, but she's talking about after they got in and there's all these weights and how hard that is to maintain. And Greg, if you want to address that.
Well, I think one of the big issues with our mental health system that needs to be addressed is that oftentimes people who come into the system and who want services are not appropriately engaged in those services. So to the caller's question and her experience, you know, they sat there and they waited for 3 hours. And that's why we see so many people who do seek mental health care drop out. And that's a huge problem. They often, over 70% of them drop out after the first or second visit. And there's a lot to figure out in how to address that and how to keep people engaged with the system. I think one of those opportunities is simply having enough capacity in the system to serve people expeditiously and to kind of meet them where they're at to ensure that they're getting the clinician recommended package of services. And oftentimes people are served at a lower level of care, that, like, you know, less services than the one that they're recommended right. for, simply because we lack resources in our system.
And maybe these reforms will provide those resources. Another caller, Tylett, is on the line. Tylett, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you, David. I have a son. He has schizophrenia. I'm an airline pilot. I'm pretty smart. And when it first came on, I had no clue what it was. It took like 2 years for me to understand it. Finally got the guy into CareLink in San Antonio, and the doctor, whose name I won't mention, he had so many patients, he's so overwhelmed. I actually stood in front of the man. I'm an ex-Marine pilot, graduated from Ohio State, got nice degrees. But I actually cried in front of this man because he gave my son so little time from the time that he's a hired employee. He's just giving medicine to my son. Abilify was the first drug. My son told me things that were happening to him, and I really tried to get on board with this guy. Stood at his door, he actually almost slammed the door on me, because I'm saying this is like a kid that's a thoroughbred. He's really smart, but something's gone wrong in his mind. Anyway, you know, I'm listening to your conversation. I'm really glad for you. I think you've really directed the conversation in the right area. But I'm going to just say the quality and the amount of treatment that people get, it's really completely lacking. I think people with dogs get more directed help from veterinarians and our society. Just, you know, if you find a dog's treated better. My son is walking the streets right now as we talk. He sleeps in a car with no engine. I've tried to give him a car. He won't take it because I can't get by that mental bump. He won't come and live with me. I can't get by that mental bump. There's nobody I'd even know to take him to come and visit him on the street in the car. And so at night he sleeps with no engine. He walks around. He has finally got him in through the Social Security, and he gets a little bit of money, like $700 a month. And I'm now he has a thing called, I think it's called a dystonia, something like that, where he's okay. got these tics from taking drugs for psychotropic medicine.
Right.
So I'm really glad that you're doing what you're doing. But you're talking about this healthcare place on the south side of San Antonio. I even intervened twice to have the police come over, special police, and they put my son in the ambulance. My son went over to a hospital, and he sat there for, I think, about 8 hours. I checked in with him hours and hours later with my wife, and he hadn't even moved out of a chair. So it's not like just sitting around. As smart as my son is, he could recognize at that moment, okay. easily recognize, oh, he just wasted his time. By the way, I was right. sent a bill for the ambulance, and the police don't put him in the car. They make right. an ambulance come San Antonio, and the fact that I pay $10,000 in taxes on my property,
okay,
and I pay for a hospital for indigents for like probably $800-900 a year.
Tylett, we're off topic here a little bit, buddy, but I appreciate you calling in. You really have brought home a story here that we don't have a whole lot of time to get into this, but so briefly, Liza, can you talk about this? Really shows us the complexity of trying to bring help to people who really need it.
So the person that was saying that they were sitting, waiting for 3 hours, there probably was not enough physician or clinical staff to be able to do that evaluation. Being able to offer that is what NAMI does. The gentleman caller that just hung up, one of the things that we offer is free mental health education for families who have loved ones with a mental illness.
So he needs help too. You can
exactly.
hear
and that's what I'm trying to say, is that he would be the perfect candidate for NAMI, for us to help educate him about the diagnosis, about the system, to give him the resources
and how to treat his own stress.
Exactly.
But so Greg Honch, or you know, the policy director at the NAMI Texas, we're keeping an eye on these bills. What can we hope for really quick?
I think we can hope for some really strong results, especially in the area of building mental health system capacity, addressing mental health parity, and strengthening our early intervention prevention programs, and also addressing mental illness in the criminal justice system.
All right, some big items that could be coming out of the Texas legislature. Greg Honch is the National Alliance for of Mental Health Texas, NAMI Texas. Also with us is Liza Jensen of the NAMI San Antonio. And we want to thank you. And also, we've got our pledge drive coming up. Supporting the Source allows these types of conversations to come to you. This is the Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned for tomorrow with more stuff.